I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I definitely wouldn't call it a surprise that the Chiefs looked as good as they did on Thursday Night Football to open up the NFL season, but they are the defending champs. It's their turf to defend. It's their throne until someone knocks them off of it. You know, it's a Game of Thrones, if you will. So the Chiefs probably weren't a surprise from week one, but now that all of week one is into books, what stands out and what did surprise you? Because I love talking football. I can tell by the traffic on our social media, the number of phone calls we've had, how excited you are to yap about football, that you're in the same boat as I am. And so you can find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on my Twitter, A-Law Radio. And I did give you a football picture. Brownie points for you if you can figure out why I'm wearing the colors that I'm wearing. So that's on our Twitter again, A-Law Radio, or also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And our toll-free line is 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. Right now, we're going to spend some time in the Pacific Northwest. It's a good view from there to be able to see what's happening across the landscape in the NFL. And we welcome Mike Sando, a senior NFL writer for The Athletic, but also a former colleague of mine from way back. Mike, I was just talking about this on my show, but a lot of people expected, even predicted, that the football would be sloppy and messy because of no preseason, that there might even be a lack of timing and teams would be completely out of rhythm, maybe not tackling the way that they should. But what did you think of the overall quality of play as you watched the games unfold week one?
Yep, I think it was surprisingly good. I think, you know, there were a couple, you know, questionable calls here that I didn't think the officiating was horrific, you know, by bad officiating standards. To me, the only thing I was concerned about, I guess, was, okay, the atmosphere of the crowd in these tense moments. But I think you even sort of get used to that. And I thought the players played, you know, hard and all of that. So I was talking to a coach who was watching film of the Kansas City game after the Thursday night. And I said, well, watching the All-22, can you tell a difference from, like, you know, a regular game? And he's like, nope, couldn't tell at all. So,
wow,
you know, I think it's gone way better than I think this whole thing's gone way better than expected, from how few people are getting COVID while playing,
right,
to the quality of play, to my enjoyment of the games, to kind of the Twitter community during the games. You know, it's all been very fun.
You know, I established a new house rule on the show because I expected it would be sloppy and kind of messy, too, that if we have scores of 6-4 or 11-5, there's still no complaining in the first month because there was a real chance this might not happen. So I agree with you. As much as I love football, and this is a normal part of September, the fact that there was some real trepidation about whether or not it would move forward has made me not take it for granted in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and, you know, I was actually looking, I think through the Sunday games, I think the scoring was actually up from a typical week one, you know, offensive scoring was. So I don't think there's been a bunch of just garbage games. You know, I've really enjoyed. And when you look at the top quarterbacks, you know, I mean, Rodgers just on fire, right? Mm. You know, Mahomes looked good. Wilson on fire. You know, it's been pretty good.
So then what stands out to you? You mentioned Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, each with four touchdown passes. So both of those teams, Packers and Seahawks, put up a lot of offense. What else really struck you from week number one as we kind of launch forward now?
Yeah, you know, I think Kansas City's defense was really good. You know, and we all talk about the offense, but I thought that was notable early on that a team that's known for their offense and is probably the best team in the league. They're now adding a running back to the mix. You know, their defense, like I said, was dominant. So that stood out to me. I think Seattle changing their offensive approach. It's only one game, but they were much more pass happy, and Pete Carroll likes to sit on the football. So that was one thing I wrote about in my column for The Athletic on Monday was, hey, you know, maybe they're going to be a little more aggressive, and Pete sort of let on that they might. So, you know, that stood out to me. I didn't read too much into the big comeback by Chicago. I mean, I think it was nice, but it didn't really change like what we think of Trubisky. You know, I think Mitch Trubisky struggled for most of the game, and we're not all suddenly believers. And I would think the last thing, well, too, Brady is going to need some time, I think, there. I think they'll be okay. And the other thing was just a disappointment of Carson Wentz. You know, I just feel like he's so highly thought of, you know, in personnel circles. People are just itching to kind of push him up among the elite. But 8 sacks, those 2 picks, and they can't beat Washington. That's disappointing to me.
How much of the 8 sacks was on Carson? Because he is a guy that likes to be mobile, except that he was under siege. Yeah.
He was. And I mean, certainly it was a less than ideal situation. So we have to split that among play calling, offensive line, him. But I just feel like he is always going to go down swinging. You know what I mean? And he's just like a boxer who wants to try to knock you out in the first round. Sometimes you just have to throw your jab and make it through a few rounds and maybe win a decision, you know? And I think he has a tendency to risk the bad play. And against a team like Washington, they didn't need to score that many points, you know, if they would have just not turned over the ball and that sort of thing. So that stood out to me. In a division two, like the NFC East, where I don't think Dallas is that great. Some people do. I don't. I think that division could be taken by somebody if Philly could get it together.
I feel like that division is always this way. It is marked by just barely above average play.
Yeah. Yeah, and people always put their hopes in the talent of the Cowboys. And I'm like, maybe Jerry Jones is a master marketer, because I just don't know that teams ever really overcome not great ownership. And I think Jerry Jones is a great owner for, you know, in business and all that. But, I mean, I think he makes it hard for the coach to coach the team. And it's a major reason why they always just sort of disappoint, you know. I feel like they're in that mold again this year, but yet Vegas has their win total at 10. People talk about them all during the what used to be the preseason, how good they're going to be. I don't feel it.
Mike Sando is a senior NFL writer with The Athletic, has been covering the league since 1998, joining us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. On Monday night, the early game, we had a chance to see Ben Roethlisberger back after nearly a year. 3 touchdown passes, and there were flashes of the old Big Ben, like the Big Ben in his prime. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought that was really great to see for them, you know, because really statistically, and Ben said this after the game, you know, that he felt like this was as good a defense as he's played with. And I know I was just going back before the season and looking at how good they were statistically. And last year they were as good as they've been since like maybe 2008. It goes a little under the radar because, you know, they were so bad at quarterback. And I think they've lost some explosiveness on offense, whether or not Ben's there. But if he comes back, I think we saw tonight, he's going to be at least, you know, average to above average quarterback. Maybe on his best day, he's going to be great. I think it makes him a factor.
We had one game specifically inside the AFC North with the Ravens and the Browns. And once again, the Browns start out where they set the bar really low. Sometimes I feel like they're clowning us. But we did see the Ravens come out the way that essentially they left off before their playoff loss, with 3 touchdown passes and really the ability to control the ball when they want to. How would you evaluate that division when you think Ravens, Steelers, and the Browns that have a lot of talent but a brand new head coach, and then Joe Burrow and the Bengals kind of rebuilding?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to see those two bottom teams challenge the top two. I think there's an outside chance Pittsburgh could overtake Baltimore. You know, I just don't necessarily think that's probable. It's funny, Cleveland, since the start of last season, Cleveland owns the most points scored against Baltimore, 40 last year in September, and the least, 6 this year. So they're going to be an up-and-down team. You know, I do like kind of the stabilizing force of Kevin Stefanski. I think he's going to be much steadier than Freddie Kitchens, but he's a first-time coach with no off-season, with a long way to go in putting together, you know, a team. And we don't know if he's even a good head coach, right? I mean, I like what he's about, but is he going to be any good? And meanwhile, you've got Tomlin, who's been there forever. Harbaugh's been there forever. You know, I think forever with good rosters and good quarterbacks is going to win you the division. And those other two teams are trying to figure it out. And I think you just hope that what you saw at the end of the Cincinnati game, where Joe Burrow moved him up and down the field, is the future and that they can grow around him. Yet, look at that organization, right? It always sort of only rises to a certain level, no matter how good they make everything else, from a personal standpoint.
Where does that leave New England then? Because they've got a coach who's been there forever, and they have a couple of pieces who've been there for a long time. But there's a lot of turnover because of free agency, because of opt-outs, obviously Cam Newton as their new QB. So where do they fall in the AFC hierarchy?
Yeah, I don't think they can push, you know, even necessarily to win a playoff game unless they really drew a bad team. I do think they have a chance to win that division. You know, I would probably on paper go with Buffalo, but I think we saw, even with good statistics, passing stats yesterday, you know, Josh Allen's a little bit of a roller coaster, and the ball's coming out, and he fumbles early in the game, fumbles a couple times. You know, you do that against better teams, you're going to be just like they were in the playoffs. They're not going to win a playoff game. So I think New England can hang around, but I don't think, you know, the 15 running plays for Cam Newton is a sustainable formula over the course of the season. I was actually kind of shocked that they ran him that often. I thought Miami was horrific. Couldn't even get any hard shots on him. They go to Seattle this week. Jamal Adams, Bobby Wagner. You know, I think I'll be interested in seeing if that approach can work, because in the absence of that approach, having to open it up and throw the ball, I don't think they have the personnel to do that and be explosive enough and change field position and put up points. And New England hasn't really for the last year and a half, even when Brady was there.
Julian Edelman becomes even more critical, or at least as critical as he was when he was Tom Brady's security blanket. Mike Sando is with us from The Athletic, covering the NFL after hours here on CBS Sports Radio. We've had already some significant injuries. The Dallas Cowboys reporting some. The Packers, of course, the Broncos had already lost Von Miller, and they're without Cortland Sutton. So when you look around some of the injuries that have popped up in the last week or so, which ones do you think will be the most impactful?
Well, I've really paid attention to Philly, you know, and some of those, you know, they weren't all during the game. Some of them before. I just think when you start out down a couple of offensive linemen, you know, and there's another team that's escaping me in my mind right now. I think, you know, Dallas was down, you know, down a tackle. Oh, and Denver's down, you know, a right tackle.
Right.
I think that really catches up with you over the course of a season. There's in a game, you know, you're going to have seven of those guys active sometimes, you know, and so you just, I know they have the expanded practice squads, but there's just not enough of them to go around. So when you get down to your third and fourth tackle and have to play, you know, a significant number of games, I think it catches up to you.
And you mentioned the practice squads and the depth and the fact that rosters are smaller. How confident are the people inside the NFL that you've spoken to about whether or not the league can actually do this for 17 full weeks and the playoffs?
I think way more confident than like a month ago, right? I mean, I just felt like there's no way. And they weren't going to have a true bubble like the NBA did. And there's more players on the rosters. And you would just think that people would be coming down with it and spreading it to their team. And it may happen, but it just doesn't feel like it's even a risk of being out of control. So they must be doing a great job. And, you know, more power to them. I think all of us who love football want them to be able to play as safe as possible, and got so much enjoyment out of week one that, you know, why can't it happen in week two, right? Why can't it happen in week three?
You had a chance to attend a Seahawks scrimmage where there weren't any fans in the stands. And I know they're pumping in crowd noise, and it varies based on what network you're watching or what radio station you're listening to. But inside the stadiums, it's supposed to be staying at this steady 7 decibel level. A friend of mine described it as being inside an airport. But what did it sound like to you when you were inside CenturyLink and it was empty?
Yeah, it was actually a mock game. So they came out of the locker room and they had the national anthem and everything, you know, for the game. And it was kind of surreal to me because even in the press box, we were socially distanced, right? So I'm sitting in the press box, I have a mask on. There, instead of being sitting on, you know, on top of each other with people everywhere, and you're afraid of spilling someone's coffee when you wheel around with your elbow, you know, there's really, you could have had, you could have brought like your nieces and nephews, and they could have had coloring books out, right? There was that much room, and it just seemed like there were so few people in the press box. And of course, no one in the stands is completely different. I was actually talking to people who were at the games, you know, front office type people, and they said they could totally hear people on the sideline, you know, and the quarterbacks and all that. So I think it's totally different from a TV standpoint. It's not as different as I thought it would. You know, I think there's a big gap between what it is on TV, trying to make it be what we're used to, versus in the stadium where it's hard to fake it.
A couple of things that jumped out at me, reaction from Sunday. One was Sean McVay saying that not only could he hear his own guys up and down the sideline and what they were saying on the field, he could actually hear reaction on the opposite sideline. So it wasn't that loud inside the stadium that they couldn't hear everything. And then something else that I thought was interesting, too, I think it was Chris Collinsworth that mentioned it, is that it's odd to hear a snap count. If you're a receiver lined up wide, you normally don't hear the snap count inside a stadium, unless, of course, the fans have really quieted down, but that you're going more about the rhythm as opposed to actually hearing what your quarterback is saying.
Oh, yeah. So, like, watch the Green Bay game. Aaron Rodgers got Minnesota to jump twice on third down, and on one of those, I think it was might have been the one where they completed the deep pass down the right side. If you watch before the snap, all of the receivers out to the side have their heads turned back. They're, like, listening to Rodgers read him a bedtime story, you know, and Rodgers has got like full command of everything. And he makes that poor defensive tackle who's just trying to be in the starter's blocks, don't jump. And he's just toying with them, and he gets the guy to jump, and the receivers take off on time. They press down the field and go. They complete a pass. It was almost not fair.
Well, yeah, true. And he was picking on their younger cornerbacks as well, the Vikings' younger cornerbacks. We're just getting started. We'll see how this plays out since it's just mid-September. But you can find Mike on Twitter at SandoNFL. He's a senior NFL writer for The Athletic. And we go way back from our days at a previous network. So it's good to catch up with you again, Mike. Thanks so much for the time.
Hey, thanks for thinking of me, Amy, and have a good week, too.
Oh, is it too early to talk about week two? I don't think it is. Mike set us up perfectly, even as we're sorting through the fallout from week number one. Well, I'll just set you up for what's to come in a few days. This Sunday, another NFL on CBS doubleheader. The early games highlighted by the NFC this time. So Giants and Bears, along with the Broncos, squaring off against the Steelers. Game two, Patrick Mahomes and the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs inside the AFC West against the Chargers, or you've got the Baltimore Ravens taking on the Texans. Can Baltimore pile on with Bill O'Brien's Texans? It all starts with JB and the guys. That includes Boomer and Phil and Nate. The NFL today at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, Sunday on CBS. We did it. We started talking about week number two, but I blame Mike Sando. Okay, I put a post up on our Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on my Twitter. I'm not as good at the posts on social media as producer Dave and Chris and Isaac and Tom. They're all much better than me. They always use GIFs. I don't use GIFs. So mine is just a boring post. But there's a picture on Facebook. So if you look underneath the picture, see, I did that for you. There's a picture, and then you look underneath the picture, and then you can see the post about the surprises and what stands out to you. So I'm already seeing some of your responses roll in, and I've got a bunch of mine lined up as well.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Daniel Jones is 3 of 4 on first downs for 65 yards. Calls out signals, back to throw. Zips one right, and it's intercepted. Intercepted at the 37-yard line. That zone drop, and T.J. Watt gets the interception. Jones on a play fake. He's going to roll to his left. He's under pressure. He gets hit as he throws the ball. Flutters up in the air, and it's intercepted by the Steelers.
That's an unforced error. He cannot. He's either got to throw the ball away or take the sack. That's on the young quarterback there, Bob.
Unfortunately, I have to face him every day in practice. They're one of the best defenses I've played with, and I've played with some really good ones. And so I'm excited to be on the football field with them. And what they do is they allow, as a quarterback, they allow you to play more free, because if you do make a mistake, you can count on them to bail you out of it. And they did it tonight.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
High praise from one Ben Roethlisberger about his Steelers defense. And as you remember from a season ago, Mike Tomlin loses his starting quarterback, his future Hall of Fame quarterback, and promptly goes out and trades a pair of first-round draft picks for Minkah Fitzpatrick. Why would you do that when your season is over, quote-unquote? But that's not what Mike Tomlin believed. It was a brilliant move. And in shoring up his defense, they ended up going 8-8, despite using three different starting quarterbacks. Oh my gosh, funny moment on social media. I'm not sure if you guys saw it, but Devlin Hodges, Duck Hodges, who of course was the backup to the backup last year and got a couple of quality starts in there for the Steelers, and lots of people getting to know his nickname. He tweeted on Monday, OMG, Team Juju followed me. Isn't that funny to think about in a locker room where you just assume they're all buddies and whatever, whatever? Yeah, right. There are different rules that apply to different levels of stars on social media. And a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster is, well, he's way up there. He's tier one, where a guy like Duck Hodges, not so much. He's more of a D-list social media celebrity. So that was kind of funny. Anyway, so back to the Steelers defense. Mike Tomlin believed that the defense was just a piece or two away and could actually make them a contender. And they were. They were right in the mix there for a wild card spot until the very end, and would have been the last team from the AFC to make the playoffs were at the expanded format that we're looking at for 2020. So now they have the defense and they have the offense and their fearless leader back. And that defense came up with three sacks, two interceptions, and eight QB hits on Daniel Jones. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Love to hear your thoughts after week number one, maybe your surprises, what stands out to you. I've got a bunch of observations, but I don't want to make them all myself. It's more fun when we can get together and talk about what we just saw. Think about what you've done, NFL. So on Twitter or Facebook, and then our phone number is 855-212-4227. Wait till you hear what Bruce Arians said surprised him about week number one in the NFL. But let's talk to Craig, who's in Arizona. Welcome to the show.
Amy, let me tell you, your personality and enthusiasm
Yay.
Are invigorating.
I hope so.
Number one. Number two, everybody will be rooting for Tiger and Phil. And now to the NFL.
I don't know that that's true. I think sometimes if you root for Tiger, you don't root for Phil and vice versa. I'm not sure everybody roots for Tiger. I wouldn't say that's the case. But I do believe those two combined, they're probably going to have the majority of fans. I just don't know that everybody is rooting for both.
Yeah, I know. But all the guy golfers I know up here in Northern Arizona, they're all Tiger fans as I am.
That wouldn't surprise me.
But since Phil is ASU in San Diego, mm-hmm. I'm more of a Phil fan than a Tiger fan.
Plus, Phil is now eligible for the senior tour as well. So how cool would it be if he actually finally won the U.S. Open?
You know, because of Tiger's pride, I don't think he'll ever do the senior tour. Phil might.
I don't think Tiger's body is going to hold up.
Yeah, that's true. The backs go quick. But as far as the NFL goes, week one, my favorite part was the Cowboys losing. And what hurt was my San Francisco 49ers losing to the Cardinals. And what hurt was the Patriots winning. And what hurt was, and what hurt was the Eagles losing, because my wife is a huge Eagles fan. She's a Jersey girl. And yes, I have to hear the lectures about every other day.
About the Eagles?
My question is,
wait, you have to hear the lectures about the Eagles?
Just lectures about me being a man, I guess.
Oh.
Drinking and stuff like that.
Oh, yes, because only men drink. Okay, go ahead. You were going to ask
there?
Me? I work here, so I'm still here.
What do you think of Tyler Murray, is he for real?
Kyler Murray?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely he's for real. Even as a rookie, you could tell that he had the goods. He takes care of the football. He makes smart decisions. His height has become a non-factor, which I love. He gets rid of the ball quickly. He's got good field vision. Obviously, is extremely mobile and hard to bring down, and so he's a dual threat guy. So I think that the fact that he and Cliff Kingsbury came in together, it's perfect for them because they were in the newlywed stage. Now they can move forward and develop this solid relationship that should last for years. And the fact that they brought in DeAndre Hopkins, my goodness, that's already paying dividends. And so, yes, I do believe Kyler Murray is going to be, as long as he stays healthy, will be a starting quarterback in this league for a long time. And the relationship that he and Cliff Kingsbury have, and now that he's got with his receivers, Kenyon Drake being added last year. I mean, they needed to give him weapons. They needed to shore up the offensive line. They've done that, which is why a lot of people are looking at Arizona as a dark horse this season, though. They definitely announced themselves with that week one victory against the Niners.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right. Good to talk to you, sir.
Jamie.
Enjoy the U.S. Open later in the week. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. He brings up the Niners and the Cardinals. I'm not surprised that the Cardinals won, though that was the game that knocked me out of the survivor pool. I will just explain again. I picked the Niners, but I didn't feel good about it. I was going to go back and change it. And then, of course, I didn't because I'm a delinquent and I was too busy thinking about everything else going on Sunday. And so I'm already out, but I feel like there's less pressure on me now. Such a relief to be done because I wasn't going to last past week three anyway.
Oh, no!
Thank you, Tom. And so the Niners defense, not the offense, because they lost their top two wide receivers because George Kittle was injured. I mean, I'm not surprised so much that the offense seemed to have some stops and starts. It surprised me, though, that the defense gave up two go-ahead touchdowns in the fourth quarter. I mean, that was a lockdown defense that could really cover up for the mistakes or the inequities of the offense last year. And we didn't see that on Sunday. And so I was kind of surprised by that. So what surprised you and what surprised Bruce Arians? You'll hear him talk about it straight ahead.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. It's a Touchdown Tuesday on After Hours.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
1 minute to beat 10. He's gone!
They throw in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Made a guy miss. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown! Southern Salting into the end zone. Touchdown!
To cast your vote for the TD of the week, head to @AfterHoursCBS on Twitter or give us a call at 855-212-4227. The Chicago Bears.
Snap back, Trubisky to wind up, throw down the right side for Miller. Over-shoulder catch.
Touchdown.
Makes the gap. Touchdown. Touchdown, Bears. Almost like Thanksgiving Day near the 2-yard line. An over-the-shoulder throw and a beauty by Mitchell Trubisky.
The Jacksonville Jaguars.
Under center is Minshew. Robinson, the running back. Play fake. Minshew looks. Fires. Corner of the end zone. Wide open. Keelan Cole's going to walk into the end zone. Touchdown, Jacksonville. And the Jags have taken the lead with 5:56 to play in the ball game.
The Pittsburgh Steelers.
Ben Roethlisberger back to pass. Looking. And throws, and it is complete touchdown, Juju Smith-Schuster. By the way, with that touchdown pass, Ben Roethlisberger tying Eli Manning for eighth all-time with touchdown passes in NFL history and doing it in Eli Manning's old stomping grounds.
The Cincinnati Bengals.
Burrow waits for the shotgun snap on 2nd and 10 from the Chargers 23. He runs a quarterback draw.
Nice.
Trey Hopkins with a great block.
Yeah.
The 10,
yeah.
5, touchdown.
Beauty.
As Joe Burrow's first NFL touchdown comes on a 23-yard run on a beautifully called quarterback draw.
Our four candidates for the first Touchdown Tuesday poll of the season. So as we say, sayonara Monday, and we put Monday Night Football in the rearview mirror, we actually have a candidate from Monday Night Football, Big Ben. Moving up the charts, career touchdown passes, and doing it at MetLife Stadium, where he passes Eli Manning. So Pittsburgh Radio Network with one of our candidates, Ben Roethlisberger, 3 touchdowns against the Giants on MNF. How about Anthony Miller catching that beauty of a pass from Mitch Trubisky, who had 3 touchdown passes in the fourth quarter for the Bears against the collapsing Lions. Keelan Cole catching the pass from Gardner Minshew, who also had a stellar day, only missed on 1 pass all game as the Jaguars rallied past the Colts in the fourth quarter. And finally, welcome to the NFL rookie, Joe Burrow, with his first touchdown being a quarterback draw on the ground for 23 yards. And that's the Cincinnati Radio Network. And so a lot to like about week one. And we put a poll up on our Twitter, After Hours CBS. We also put the poll up on our Facebook page. We want to know which TD you think stands out from all the rest for TD of the week. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. And while you're on our Twitter or on Facebook, we'd love to hear from you about the surprises, the moments maybe, or the elements of week one that stand out to you. I'm busy writing a CBS Sports Minute, and I've got a lot of these different elements going through my brain. And also, I'm thinking about what stood out to me, what I tweeted about, because a lot of times it's something that I tweet about so that I don't forget it later on. And so there's just a lot to digest from week one. And it's positive that we got through week one, but there's also negatives. Definitely some injuries that will affect teams moving forward. So whatever it is, find us on Twitter and Facebook or our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. I will say there are a lot of people who, at the very least, had raised eyebrows over the way that Tom Brady played on Sunday.
Here is the snap in play action fake. Brady throws the ball upfield. It is intercepted at midfield. Picked off down the side inside the numbers to the 36-yard line. Picked off by Lattimore. Marshawn Lattimore picks off Tom Brady, and that's a rarity.
Now a second down and 15 from their own 32. Ball in the left hash. Bucks working from our left to right. Chris Godwin in motion again to the right. Brady takes a gun snap. Quick throw near side. It's picked off. Janoris Jenkins, 15, 10, 3, 2, 1. Touchdown. Janoris Jenkins, pick 6.
Pair of interceptions from Tom Brady. And not just that. There were plenty of moments where the offense was out of sync. There was an intentional grounding call in there as well on Brady. And so he ends up going 23 of 36, had 239 yards. But in addition to his 2 touchdown passes, had the picks that you hear on both the Bucks and Saints radio networks, 3 sacks that were mixed in there too. He saw plenty of pressure from the Saints, so they were able to get to him a few times. And while there were some impressive stretches, and that would include the first offensive drive where he had a QB sneak to get in for the touchdown, it was very disjointed. I don't know if dysfunctional is the right brand to put on it, but it was disjointed. It was inconsistent. It was out of sync. And you can count Bruce Arians among those guys who believe that this was a surprise.
He looked like Tom Brady in practice all the time, so it's kind of unusual to see that in the ball game because they didn't do the things that we didn't get ready for. Everything they did, we thought we were ready for.
We thought we were ready for it, and yet Tom Brady and the offense didn't flow well, didn't find a rhythm, didn't find a groove. So that's the surprise of one Bruce Arians. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. So I look forward to hearing from you. A lot of you already weighing in on Facebook. And some of these crack me up. I can't help it, you guys. Some of these make me laugh. But I won't tell you which ones. I'll just read them with a straight face as much as I possibly can. Eric on Facebook. The Chargers did a good job. We played prevent down the stretch. Played a great game, able to hold off Cincinnati. And he says, I was also able to check out the Rams-Cowboys game. This one could have gone either way. I think a lot of the games in the first week could have gone either way. A lot of the games in the first week generally do have that feel to them where you've got one team that's up, maybe in the case of the Eagles, up 17 points. And then whether you point to Carson Wentz and his mistakes or you look at the pressure that he was getting, not just the 8 sacks by Washington, but another 15 QB hits on top of that, he definitely bears responsibility. But it's also difficult to make really smart, safe decisions, wise decisions, run through your reads, decide the best option when there are big men who are flying at you and who are making life difficult. So we saw that. We saw that wild swing between Philadelphia and Washington. We also saw the wild swing between Chicago and Detroit. Now, that may not be as big of a surprise considering it was Detroit. But the fact that Mitchell Trubisky had looked so bad, had looked like he was about to lose his job as the starting QB, and then he throws 3 touchdown passes in the fourth quarter. So that was one that definitely surprised me. I don't think I'm surprised by Phillip Rivers with his 2 interceptions. That's kind of part of the package with Rivers, but definitely surprised that the Jaguars were able to come back the way that they were. So those are a few of the things that stand out to me. Not at all surprised that it was the best of times and the worst of times for Joe Burrow. A, he's on the Cincinnati Bengals, and B, rookies giveth and rookies taketh away. And so those things don't necessarily surprise me. I really was a little bit shocked by what happened to the Niners defense in the fourth quarter against the Cardinals. I mentioned that, to be sure. So that's one surprise. Couple of you on Facebook pointing to the lack of flags in week one, which I was pleasantly surprised about. I will agree with you, but I was pleasantly surprised that we didn't have over officiating. And as much as Mike Pereira asked for mercy with the officials and to cut them some slack because they didn't have preseason either, I kind of felt like the games were relatively clean. And while there were some flags that I would disagree with, I didn't feel like the officials were trigger happy or were whistle happy. So yeah, I think those were good surprises, to be sure. So Dane says he enjoyed the lack of flags in the games that he watched. Jared says his surprises that the Chargers and Rams both won on Sunday. Glenn says, I'm a huge Cowboy fan and I shouldn't be surprised that nothing has changed. Can you really make that determination after 1 week? And this is what I was talking about with the tendency to overreact. A lot has changed with the Cowboys. And the problem is so much has changed that it's hard to find that consistency without actually taking reps against another team. And so I will disagree with you that nothing's changed. Mike McCarthy is not the same as Jason Garrett. And we're going to see the changes. Now, they've got some personnel issues they have to deal with. Leighton Vander Esch, broken collarbone confirmed. He's out at least 6 weeks. You can probably game plan for that. A lot of times on the collarbone, it takes closer to 2 months. And then Blake Jarwin. This one hurts me. I feel so terrible for Blake. He finally gets the job as the number one tight end for the Cowboys, and he tears his ACL. And that's brutal. Marlon Mack, I think his was the torn Achilles. So that's really sucky as well for the Colts running back. And he had such a good year last year. And so there are a bunch of them, the injuries that stand out. Some of the offensive linemen. I think the one for Green Bay was particularly poignant. Lane Taylor, right? He had worked so hard to get to the point where he could be on the field. He had missed a good portion of last year with injuries. And now he's hurt again. So that one sucks. Will just posted this on our Facebook page. The Titans pro kicker missing so many field goals. Yeah, the fact that it's Steven Goskowski and that he missed 3 times plus an extra point, definitely that was a surprise. But all is forgiven when you make the game-winning kick with 17 seconds to go. So on our Facebook page or on Twitter, A-Law Radio, 855-212-4227. We didn't have a chance to talk to producer Dave on last night's show because we were so jammed full. Plus, he was eating the chili that I brought him, so I kind of feel like he was busy doing other stuff. I enjoyed the chips that he brought, and he enjoyed the chili. So we were like ships passing in the night. But is there something that stood out to you that surprised you?
Yeah, I was definitely busy with the chili. Any free moment I got, I was eating that.
And then you were eating salad later.
Yeah, you got, you know, fuel for the engine. I'm actually surprised by how many things didn't surprise me. I thought that...
Do you have to make it complicated?
Yes. I just, when you go through and recap and you start to look at the scores, the box scores, the teams, the results, how players and teams played, not as many things stood out to me. It wasn't, maybe the slop, that it wasn't sloppy. Maybe that is one thing that we've all talked about. That wasn't that, you know, that was surprising that it wasn't that sloppy. But outside of the Redskins-Eagles game, and just how putrid that offensive line was and couldn't protect Carson Wentz.
So bad.
Outside of that, no result really surprised me that much.
I think Bears coming back with three touchdowns in the fourth quarter, that surprised me.
The way it happened, sure. I just don't think the Lions are a good football team, though. Mm-hmm. So I think when you look at the end result, I think that divisional matchup with two very mediocre teams, you know, the final result didn't surprise me. The way it happened, absolutely.
And so there's a lot out there that we can chew over. I just saw this tweet, A-Law Radio, Seattle D was supposed to be weak. They aren't. I don't know that I would label the Seattle defense weak, but the defense did give up 500-plus yards to the Atlanta Falcons offense. So to me, that was noteworthy, at least. He says number 12 for Tampa is magic, but magic takes time to gel.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.